We're the Hidradenitis Superadivas. If you got HS, you'll want to meet us. It's not your fault, put the shame to a halt. HS divas know how to have a ball. The Hidradenitis Superadivas. Put the shame to a halt, cause it's not your fault.
Hey guys, it's Brinley with the Hidradenitis Superadivas. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Season 2. Just a heads up, if you are watching on YouTube, you will not see any video of the hosts. Unfortunately, the recording was stuck on time lapse, which is not super helpful. So we do have all of the video of the guest who was on Zoom. That's perfect. If you're not watching on YouTube, this has zero bearing on you at all. Everything will still run just as it should. So just a heads up that, again, we won't have any video of the host, but we hope you enjoy the episode. Thanks.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Hidradenitis Superadivas podcast. Thank you so much to Insight for sponsoring this episode. And today we're here with Dr. Barry Resnick, who is the founder of the Resnick Skin Institute in Miami, Florida. And we're huge fans because he's a huge HS guy. So if you're anywhere near him, he's the guy to go see. So Dr. Resnick, welcome. Thank you so much for being here today.
Happy to be here to spread the gospel.
Perfect. Amen. So we wanted to kind of start with, can you tell us what HS is? I know we've had this on every episode that we've done with any kind of MD, but it's like always important to start out with that.
What I tell every new patient who I see for HS, this is how I'll tell them. I'll say, hey, let me tell you what it is and what it isn't. So it is a disease of the skin only. Because the follicles get plugged, the inflammation comes behind the follicles, has no place to go, explodes through the follicle into the skin, and that explosion and healing ends up leaving us with the classic scarred plaques, those ant farms that generate pain and smell and ooze all the time. They're like time bombs. They explode, but they reset. It is not a disease of infection. It's not from being dirty or not washing enough. It's not your fault. It's not sexually transmitted. It's not contagious. It's not from glands. It's not from hormones. It's not in the fat. It's not in the muscle. It is a disease of the skin only. That, I think, is the biggest message to give to people.
Absolutely. And then you had mentioned something in there about like hormones, and we know that hormones can potentially be a trigger for HS, but we know that it's not due to hormones, correct?
It's not due to high hormone, low hormone. You've got plenty of men doing testosterone therapy, and it's not worsening their HS. You've got plenty of women who are doing estrogen and testosterone, whether it's by pellet, bioidentical, or creams, or troches, and it's not messing with them. And we use spironolactone as a good treatment for HS. We know that spironolactone is a testosterone receptor inhibitor, a blocker, but we don't really know why it's working for HS. So yes, we have beaten that dead horse. It's not hormones.
Perfect.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Well,
that was a good breakdown.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what do you think is really important for the HS community at large to know? I think, you know, for me, we always struggle with everyone thinking it's an infection all of the time. And I have a hard time explaining to people that what looks like an infection on a normal person. So anyone without HS, if you saw something that looked like an HS lesion on us or an abscess, we would be like, you should go to the doctor because something's going on with your skin. But for us with HS, that's kind of like the normal way that HS presents. And so it's difficult. We see so many people going straight to like the ER or urgent care for incision and drainage or lancing. And how do we help the community know and understand that this is basically what we can come to expect, is that it looks for us, for anyone else, it would look like it would be something that needed immediate attention and you should go to the ER. But for us, this is the normal.
It's tough. Because it's not a disease of infection, but we have all this pus. And I'll tell patients that the tracts that we have within the skin are lined with a weird kind of epithelium that creates a goop in which bacteria overgrow. So the pus is a secondary issue. We got a lot of it, but we're not infected. We're colonized. If we were infected, we would have signs of systemic infection. An elevated blood pressure, an elevated fever, an elevated temperature. We would have high white count, but because of the infection. And HS patients do have high white counts. A white count is like a WBC, a white blood cell count. It's going to be elevated, partially because we're just inflamed all the time, partially because we get a lot of steroids when we're trying to help patients get over humps. And steroids cause an elevation of white blood cells. It's called margination, because we have a word for everything in medicine. So back to what do we do with these things? Sometimes you do have a very obvious big abscess that's hurting. And an abscess, by definition, is a walled-off collection of infection within the skin. It's not standard of care to treat it with antibiotic. It's standard of care to do an incision and drainage. But sometimes in HS, what we see as an abscess is a lot more inflammation. It doesn't feel like there's stuff on the inside. That's the term fluctuant. You know, you put your fingers together, but you can't feel it moving. And making a hole in that simply ends up almost always creating a permanent hole. So that's going to leak even more. So in a pinch, an ER or an urgent care is the place to go when you are in pain and your doctor, your dermatologist who's treating for your HS can't see you. But if you've got me or someone like me from the HS Foundation who treats HS, we should be the first place you reach out to, because we're going to say, in my instance, I use a system called Clara. It's a secure texting app. And first thing out of my staff's mouth is going to be, hey, or out of their fingertips is going to be, please send us some well-lit in-focus photos so we can see what's going on. And I will almost always, if they're distant to me, I'll say, hey, looks like you're in pain. Medicine's not cutting the mustard right now. Let's put you on a prednisone taper. You know, if you're not taking antibiotic, but you were successful with it, let's put you on some doxycycline or some Bactrim. Because the reason, and I know I'm sort of digressing now, the reason we use antibiotics in HS is because they are anti-inflammatory, not because they kill bacteria. Yeah, they kill bacteria, but since this is not a disease of infection, using antibiotic is to decrease inflammation. This is a disease of chronic inflammation. And I'm telling patients, hey, you have a disease with a medicines deficiency. You know, it's like diabetes. If you don't take your insulin, ultimately you're gonna die. With HS, if you don't take your medicines, you will just live in hell forever. So all of this inflammation, all of this pain that we're going through falls to the wayside, falls down in depth because we're controlling the disease. So the goal is control of the disease. And then once we've got you under control, you're not going to wake up every day seized by the disease. You're not going to have that daily maze of what am I sticking to this morning? Where am I hurting this morning? What am I going to bleed this morning? I'm feeling human today. My goal for any of my patients, for everyone with HS, is to feel human 30 out of 30 days. You know, and then I will tell patients, you know, there's this saying in life, it's just hope for peace, prepare for war. In HS, it's hope for no flare, but get a flare, because it's going to happen. But if we're under control, the flare is going to be less visible. It's going to hurt less. It's going to go away in less time. It's going to leave less mark. So we all want less. So that's where we are with what to do when we're flaring. And sometimes patients are flaring every 22 seconds. Sometimes I've got new HS patients who have flares 4 times a year. That also is going to determine whether we're going to use biologics, whether we're going to use an anti-inflammatory antibiotic, whether we're going to go with spironolactone. So, long answer to a short question. Next question.
Yeah, no, it makes sense though. And when you're speaking about biologics, I wanted to talk a little bit about that because there's such a misunderstanding, I think, of, especially for HS, what biologics do. And, you know, it's often the battle between auto-inflammatory or autoimmune, which, you know, is the constant battle that we're fighting right now. and the biologics and how they work in HS. So can you tell us a little bit more about that?
So the first concept I try to get patients to understand is that the biologics we use, practically speaking, have no side effects. They are immunomodulating medicines. They are not immunosuppressing medicines. For me, the definition of immunosuppression is the complete system pushed down. Let's just turn it off. That classically is from steroid. So when we're giving you a 6-day preg taper, when we're giving you a shot in the butt, a cortisone to calm the fire, to jumpstart the process, yeah, we're immunosuppressing you for 2 weeks, 6 days. It's not an overall immunosuppression where you're going to be wide open for a whole host of other issues. You know, we in the United States are bombarded with direct-to-consumer advertising, and the FDA is very specific about what they will allow you to say, what they want you to say. So you've got to say stuff like, while the patient's serving ice cream and hitting an ace and, you know, walking through the goldenrod fields and having daffodils float and a whole bunch of butterflies going around, they're giving you 3 minutes of you're going to die. It's like utopia on the screen and Dante's Inferno.
Yes.
They are all positive in a weird way, huh?
You're going to get inflammations. You're going to get infections. Don't worry. You may have inflammation of the perineum. That's a small piece of skin between the anus and the vagina. The anus and the penis. You know, way too much information. The bottom line is that the medicines we have that we've got from psoriasis and ulcerative colitis and Crohn's that are now moving into the HS space are, practically speaking, really safe. You know, I tell patients, Humira, the thing that works the best for the most, that is indicated for HS and I think 9 or 10 other diseases, blocks tumor necrosis factor. It's just something in your body does a job. If there's too much, you have a disease. For you, Miss or Mrs. Patient, you have HS. So when we block the TNF, you feel better. And then just following that road, the patient's going to say, well, if I feel better, when can I stop?
Yeah.
And I say, look, if you feel better, it's because the medicine's there. The minute you want to feel like crap again, the minute you want to leak and ooze and burn and sting and not feel like a human being, stop the medicine. You need to think about this as a new life, not a life sentence.
Is Humira safe to take for how long? Like, you could just take it for life? You can?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I know you can't take it
while pregnant, but can you take it, like, while breastfeeding?
Okay, let's reverse that.
Oh, can you take it while pregnant?
The newest guidelines that are going to come out that we, as an HS community, are working on, are looking at all of the paper for patients who get pregnant while on biologics, whether they're safe to go through pregnancy all the way to term. And the consensus is, yes, they are safe enough to go all the way through to term. What we tell patients, and we're coordinating with the obstetricians, we're coordinating with pediatricians, but what we're telling the patient is, you can go through with Humira because the very small, almost infinitesimal increase in birth defects or birth issues while on Humira or another biologic versus patients who are giving birth normally, it's virtually not measurable. But contrast that or do the risk-benefit calculation where you've got the almost 100% guarantee that you're going to flare, that you're going to have an explosion when they stop the medicine. There are so many people who, in the context of having HS and they're on Humira and they're so well controlled, and then they got to get a knee replacement or a hip, or they got to have an arthroscopy, the orthopedist says, can't have you on Humira. It's going to cause post-operative infection. You're going to have to stop. And I want you to stop and be off it for 4 weeks because that's the half-life. So then you show up the day of the surgery, the day before, and you're leaking. And you got pus everywhere. The guy says, oh, my God, you're infected. We can't do the surgery tomorrow. We're going to have to get you under control. So it's that constant boomerang.
Yeah,
I spend a good portion of my time talking to orthopedists and spine surgeons and colon colorectal, hey, this patient needs to be under control so that you don't have all that pus, which does have bacteria. There's no doubt. It's almost more of a chance of getting infected than if you were well controlled. Now, there are certain situations where you bow to the surgeon. If you're doing open spine work, you want to be as controlled as you can be, and they're going to have to make that determination. But we've got actual peer-reviewed papers showing that there is no increase in post-operative infection for patients who are on Humira and other biologics versus the normal population. Not, I keep saying normal, versus the non-medicated population. And then to your question about breastfeeding. There's not enough study on it. If you look at the LactMed database, it'll say there's not enough study on it. You got to decide what you're going to do. And I will tell patients, I understand the joy of breastfeeding. I understand how close it makes you feel to your child. I understand there are a lot of people who feel that breastfeeding is so very important for a strong immune system. It's not my points to argue. I said, I'm just going to let you know that for that period of time, you're going to feel bad.
Yeah.
And I can't give you a spironolactone, and I can't give you the antibiotics, you know, and we may find something that we can use, but you got to go through the LactMed database. The LactMed database looks at the amount of med in breast milk, and it'll give you a rating, just like, you know, the ratings are for medicines in terms of pregnancy. So the bottom line is that it's a tough course to navigate, but it's navigable.
Mm-hmm. Wow, thank you for sharing.
And
I live to serve.
And the biologics themselves. So my understanding was always that our immune system is overactive. And so we're like rushing to the source of anything that's going on with our body that's irritating a hair follicle. Our body is like overreacting to that. So for us, like a biologic medication like adalimumab would brings us to normal. Is that an appropriate way of explaining it?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Because adalimumab blocks TNF, it blocks the receptor. You're not allowing the TNF to work. So TNF is not the immune system. This is not an autoimmune disease. We don't have a real, at least from my perspective, good handle on what kind of disease it is. Because we know the cascade of events that leads to what we ultimately show in a classic HS case. We don't know why.
Right.
You know, why are the cells blocking the plug? Why are they no longer able to be dislodged? Where is the inflammation coming from that's pushing against that plug and exploding into the skin? We don't know. But we are in the renaissance of HS, the way that 20 years ago, psoriasis is suddenly, oh my God, we got to help psoriasis. And I hope that in 5-10 years, we're going to be where psoriasis is now. Mm-hmm. We're going to be able to throw med at you and say, hey, 100% clearance is pretty much expected. Yeah. And 100% control is pretty much expected. And, you know, I want diagnosis to happen so much more quickly and so much earlier than it is right now. And that's something that we can talk about.
Well, and I think that's where like I struggle with this conversation, because you're spitting out information I've never heard before, having HS for over 10 years. You know, I like even just getting to a specialist, I feel like is so hard with HS, especially if you don't have the resources. So it's just, it's sometimes even frustrating, you know, when I have these opportunities to be on these calls, because I'm like, most of the people don't have these opportunities to get to someone like you with any knowledge. You know, most general doctors, I would say, have none, like zero to none. They're still telling us it's a sweat glands disease. So it's just, it's interesting. I don't even know what I'm asking or saying. It's just, it's hard, you know, it's because I just learned so much from you, but there's such a huge gap in the knowledge, even with a general doctor, let alone a dermatologist, you know?
I think you're highlighting a very real chasm, a very real abyss in the treatment of HS, because it still happens. I still see patients who never should be in the state they are, who have seen, you know, 7 to 10 physicians over 7 to 10 years with 7 to 10 opportunities to intervene and nothing happens.
Yeah.
They're not ignoring it, mm-hmm. the best of my acceptance, but they're simply not knowing what to do with mm-hmm. it. And that's where the HS Foundation comes in. We're doing all of this work trying to bring more information and easily manageable portions to, let's call them the first responders of HS. We're talking about primary care physicians. We're talking about ER. We're talking about OB-GYN. Mm-hmm. You know, people who are typically going to see them at their earliest mm-hmm. and say, you know, you got two lesions here and you're telling me it happens in the same spot over here and the same spot over there. For me, that's HS. I mean, done. Doorway diagnosis. But for them, it's not. So
what is your preferred?
We're trying to, you know, we have PowerPoint.
Sorry, it's cutting out a little bit. What is your preferred treatment option? Like standard, you see X amount of HS patients a day. There's some people who come in and they're super willing. They're like, oh my gosh, I've gotten to the point where like I'm super, it's unbearable. I need something. But of course, I'm sure you see those people who are like, well, I don't really want to try that. Like, I don't know if I could trust that. Do you 90, like what's the percentage of like people who are actually, you're actually prescribing them something versus like people who are not willing?
I'd say 90% of the people I see are accepting of some kind of medicine.
That's great.
I have a small percentage of people who want to be organic, who want to be natural, who want to go to homeopathy, who are either have a religious pause against certain medicines or want to be as natural as possible. And I tell them, I understand where you're coming from. I really want to make you feel better. My goal is to make you feel human 30 out of 30 days. But all I can do is recommend stuff. And if you don't want to do this, that's fine. But you came to me for my A game. And Humira, for an example, if Humira is my A game and I want to put you on spironolactone because I want you to have something because it's going to take 2 to 6 weeks to get you your prior authorization. So I want you to be on medicine and I want to give you 2 cc's of cortisone as a shot in your butt to jumpstart stuff because you haven't felt good in a long time. And I want you to be able to see that there's light. There's a tiny little opening and I want you to see it's doable. And a lot of people want that. And a lot of people at the end of that visit will say, great, I'm really ready to go. And then they'll leave. And then they'll say, no, okay. All I can do is help. Yeah. You know, when they'll show up at our month follow-up and I'll say, so, you know, how are things? Well, I was reading on TikTok and someone said Humira is going to make my left arm fall off. And I was really worried about that. So I went on Reddit and I read a whole and then, you know, I was on Facebook and I saw that Humira caused the hair on all of these dogs to fall off because they were licking their masters. You know, I'm making a very fine point.
Yeah,
here.
Yeah. Of course. Of course.
This the is for real though. Line.
Yeah.
Oh, and that's the sad thing. It really is real. So every person's journey is different. What they've experienced before they come to see me is different. And my plan is different. So I can't give you a, hey, you know, 60% of the time I'll do antibiotics, 60% of the, or 40% of the time I'll do Humira. It doesn't work that way. Mm-hmm. You know, when I'm listening to the patients and I'm hearing their struggle, and at about that 10-minute mark, we both start to cry because he's relieved that, you know, finally she's talking to someone who knows what's going on.
Yeah.
And I'm saddened that her life has been such shit until now.
Yeah.
You know, that is always, you know, there's always a point where we both wish that she had found me earlier. She found someone like me earlier.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then when we get into the meat and potatoes of the whole thing, you know, I give them all of their options. I talk mm-hmm. to them about low-hanging fruit, the dietary supplements, turmeric and zinc gluconate, and I talk to them about the cleansers and I talk to them about laser hair reduction. I talk to them about something called mediator release testing. It looks at how your body responds to foods with inflammation. Mm-hmm. And lots of people hang on diet. Hey, you know, mm-hmm. and, you know, and on your support groups, on your chat list, I say, I went pescatarian and my HS disappeared. I became a vegan from Vega and my HS disappeared. I am bathing in apple cider vinegar and my HS disappeared. Dietary, yeah, dairy, definitely a almost universal flare process. Yeah,
with the inflammation.
So, but there are a lot of reasons. There are a lot of other things going on. So mediator release testing in particular is looking at specific foods. I offer it for chronic diseases. I have migraines. I did testing for me. There were a lot of things that triggered me for inflammation. I'd say actually 90% I never ate before. There were a couple of things on there that I did, but those were things that actually made my head feel better.
Oh, so you could take this test and it just tells you? You don't have to like eat all this stuff and try it?
Okay. On a very high level, they're going to hand you this little card. They won't hand it to you. They're going to send it to you. You're going to have this little laminated card, and it's going to have green foods, yellow foods, and red foods. So you're looking at the red foods, and you're saying, okay, I can't have persimmons. And locots and kumquats cannot be on my diet. But you can eat all the cruciferous vegetables you like, and you can have kohlrabi, and I'm just making up stuff.
Yeah.
But the point here is that on that red thing, on the stuff that I did eat, it didn't make my migraines worse. So you've got to use it practically and understand what's going on. We actually have a nutritionist dietitian who is in Michigan, who lives in Detroit, who has HS herself, but helps patients use MRT results to see if you can get improvement from it. I've got a lot of patients who get improvement from it because when you eliminate things that worsen your disease, you're going to feel better. It may not make it 100%, but it's definitely a lot more precise and a lot more zoned in than doing pescatarian for 6 months and then doing vegan and then modified paleo. So all of these things are what I talk to patients about. And they all get it. There's a huge packet that they get, whether they are in the office, they get a big folder and all that stuff. Or we'll put it up on Clara for them. We're going to upload all of these PDFs. And then they're going to get an action plan at the end of the visit. And it's going to say, this is what we talked about. And this is what we want you to do. And then we're going to have a follow-up. And you know, you pointed out, it's very hard to find someone like me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I do virtual visits. Yeah. And a lot of my colleagues do virtual visits.
Yeah.
You know, we all want to be found. You know, I'm always asking, how did you find me? Some will find me on Google. Some will find me on HS Connect. Some will find me on HS.
Hope for HS or HS Hope Foundation. HS.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there are lots of avenues. And, you know, I'm not sending out flyers. I'm not, you know, advertising. I'm just saying on my website, I do this. This is what I do. So you have to want to do it.
Yeah.
Because HS is, I'm speaking to the choir. HS is devastating both mentally and physically. It is isolating. It makes you isolate. It's a horrible disease. And the value of HS Connect and Hope for HS and the foundation is that you can see that you're not alone, that other people suffer the way you do. You know, sometimes social media pushes out the wrong message or pushes a false narrative. But I don't think that that happens in disease states. I think that you're all saying, hey, I did apple cider vinegar. It worked for me. Why not you try it? I mean, with that clean wash stuff, I've got patients who use it. I don't have patients who are having the results that a lot of your patients do. But hey, it's on my sheet. Try this. Yeah. I don't care what works, just as long as it works.
Want to try something. And I think there are dermatologists and doctors and people out there just who are like you. They just don't know, or we just don't know about them. I barely went to the dermatologist for this year after like 7 years off from my diagnosis date. So I mean, And it was only because I didn't look them up. I didn't vet them. You know, I was just like, this is a dermatologist near me. We're going to make this appointment. And I mean, like, it just, I had to make that step. You have to want it as a patient to like want the help. And even as I got there, like, it felt so good to hear her talk about the options, the treatment options. And she didn't shove any of them down my throat and was like, well, you need to do that. You know what I mean? It was just like, hey, this is kind of like, this is what I know about HS. This is what the treatment options that I'm treating to other people. And that made me feel really good about choosing her for my journey. And so that's just, I think it's powerful knowing that there are other ones out there mm-hmm. who are educated and are educating themselves. They may not be all over social media and things like that, but you know, the more of us who get the courage to make the appointment, the more we're going to find there's other doctors out there who are willing to advocate for us too.
And right, what do you think the biggest causes for the delay in diagnosis, in your opinion?
It's a harsh word, but ignorance, I think, is what's going on. But I don't think it's all on the doctor's or on the doctor's mm-hmm. side. You know, there's a lot of isolation that this disease induces in patients. They're not going to talk to their parents or their loved ones about it, and they're going to hope it goes away, which it doesn't. And they're going to hope that, you know, finally something comes up. So, oh, say hi to some. My wife. Hi, wife.
Hi, wife.
There's also medicine fatigue. You know, when a patient gets smacked about the head and neck enough times, they're not going to want to deal with it. You know, they're not going to want to face the anticipation of meeting someone who's going to help them, only to have their hopes dashed yet again. The other side of this is from a doctor point of view, for me anyways, I have started screening all of my new acne patients for this. Just a series of questions. Do you have things in your underarms or your groin or under your breasts? Do they hurt? Do they come out at multiple times in the same areas? Because when you think about a new acne visit, you're looking here. I ask about chest and back. But until I started getting into HS, I wasn't saying, hey, got it in the underarms, got it in the groin. And I'm seeing kids, you know, sometimes they're a little prepubertal, sometimes they're hitting puberty anywhere from 9 to 13. So that's the sweet spot for when it starts. And if I even set that thought in motion, because the last question is, do you know what HS is? Have you looked it up? You know, then they're going to say, huh, maybe I should bring this up. And it may not happen that visit. They may deny everything.
Right.
But maybe a couple months down the road, or maybe they'll see someone else and finally acknowledge it, say, hey, what do you think I have? So, like I said, we're at the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah, we really are at the precipice, because it's, you know, with social media, we're finding now, just by sharing stories like, you know, Sid and Mahala, how many people are coming out and saying like, oh my God, I had no idea that other people had this as well. And I hope that one day we stop seeing those messages, because it's commonplace and discussed, just like high blood pressure and eczema and psoriasis. And that HS just falls in line with that, as far as the acknowledgement of the disease, so that we don't have to have that shame about not wanting to share those pieces of ourselves with other people, including derms who can help us with it. But the sense of shame that comes with having HS is huge. And I hope that will eventually go away as we try to make HS more commonplace and more discussed, and encourage people to go to derms and push derms to learn, and other doctors like you had mentioned. I mean, that's one of the parts as an advocate that's hard, is to look at the entire realm of everyone who needs knowledge and education about HS, and you're like, oh my God, where do we start? And I'm sure you guys feel the same way at the HS Foundation. Like, it's a mountain to climb, and you have to start just one bite at a time. But yeah, it's definitely interesting that you say, you know, ignorance, because I think that really is the case. And I also think one of the problems we see in the HS community too, is that people will go to a derm for the first time, which takes a lot of courage on our part. And then they'll be told that they need to lose weight and quit smoking and like kind of, you know, sent on their way. And we see that still so frequently. And I think that's one of those kind of slaps in the face, which everybody knows that we need to lose weight and stop smoking is bad for your health, all of that stuff. But when you're coming to a place like a dermatologist's office for that support, and to for medical management, and then you're told that, like, basically if you just lose weight and quit smoking, you're going to be good. It's a really hard thing to manage, and people don't tend to go back because they kind of added more shame onto you, by leaving you with just those thoughts.
Well, and I think there's a financial aspect I always like to talk about. Like, I haven't had insurance as an adult majority of my life. So also just the financial part of going into the dermatologist once to not get a result to me is a burden. Like, it wasn't worth it, you know? And it's unfortunate, but I think that's a lot of cases with people without insurance. Mm-hmm. They go in, they make this investment and nothing comes out of it. I mean, I was told the first time I went to a dermatologist, I wasn't clean. Like, swear, I cannot make this up, you know? So like, it's bridging this gap. I mean, I love how like transparent and blank you are about this. And it just, I mean, I'm happy we have our platforms to just share this on, because mm-hmm. I think as much as we'd like to say, just a lot of people don't have access mm-hmm. to these dermatologists. You know what I mean? So,
and I think that's what's so important about you guys being a part of the podcast, because it's almost essentially like they're getting, like, they're talking to you too, you know what I mean? Because we gather so many of these questions to ask you guys from what our comments say and messages we get. And so I think this really gives them that front row seat to what to expect if I go to the dermatologist, or what a dermatologist who does specialize in HS, what would he recommend? So they kind of have tools in their HS toolbox to, when they are ready to get the courage to go to, they know, like, they have things to go off of. They're not going in blind.
And it makes me want to promote. See, like, I haven't wanted to tell my followers to go to the dermatologist, honestly, but you know, like, even just having a platform like yours that I can, you know, hey, he does consultations via text or whatever cool things you said, you know, I think that's really amazing.
Telehealth is like, real.
Yeah.
So we appreciate you coming.
It's my pleasure. We do virtual visits. So that's, you know, in the exact same way that we're doing this now. I use a HIPAA compliant platform, but this is how I interact with someone who's in Northern Florida, who is in Dubai, who is in India, who is in Germany, who is in Oklahoma, who's in Denver. So that increases my reach, and I welcome the opportunity to work with the local dermatologist. I would say 35 to 40% of the time, the dermatologist has said, hey, please go find an HS specialist and I'll help. Because the way it works medical legally, I can't prescribe for you unless you live in Louisiana, because I am licensed in Louisiana. That's why I went to medical school, and Florida. But the minute you come down and visit me face to face in my office, you become my patient, and I prescribe for you wherever you live. I am waiting.
So we just gotta go to Miami first?
Yes, if you want me to prescribe for you. But again, I'm saying, hey, I'm going to work with your local dermatologist. I will call them. I will talk to them and say, hey, let's start with Humira 40 a week. You know, if it's not working, let's add spironolactone, the cyclosporin. Let's check to make sure we don't have antibodies. You know, I'll do all of that in the context of helping the patient, because that's what we're supposed to do.
Yeah.
And if someone, you know, I do a lot of a special kind of surgery for this. So a lot of patients hear about me for that. They'll come and they'll do my surgical mapping visit and say, okay, so how are you doing with this? Well, I haven't really started. The person's kind of scared. At least that's my impression. And I'll say, well, now that you're in my office, you're my patient, I can prescribe for you. So let's get things started. And I've got infrastructure. You know, when I put people on Remicade, I've got infrastructure in all the states where I can get it happening at your home or your office for the infusions. When I do Picline and ertapenem, which is a very effective antibiotic, anti-inflammatory that goes in through the vein, I can get that done. Sometimes I can't. Sometimes the insurance plans will block that. Sometimes the insurance plans will have a whole host of very draconian issues that we've got to contend with. But most of the time, we get to yes. So where there's a will, there's a way. And every day, there are more and more dermatologists and surgeons and infectious disease, maybe not so much infectious disease, a lot of dermatologists who are coming on board, and you know, we'll say they're seeing the light. We run this chat list called HS Place. It's for medical. It's for PAs and practitioners. It's for physicians. It's for researchers. And we're all over the world. And we're discussing cases and we're saying, hey, this is what I'm using. This is what's working. Or I'm not getting the results I want. What do you guys think? So there's a lot of collaboration going on. And it's helping move the treatment forward. You know, I used to have to do ERT by PICC line. PICC line is great. And here's a situation you may not ever have heard of, Penem. It's a very effective antibiotic for a lot of infections, but it is tremendously anti-inflammatory. And I tell patients, 98% of the people, this is my own percentage, 98% of the people who go on this feel like $1 million by day three. And what I hear from those patients is, I am so pissed that I have a PICC line because I feel so good. I want to go work out, but I can't work out because I got a PICC line. And by the way, a PICC line is a percutaneous intravascular central catheter. That's what PICC stands for. And it's sewn into the skin and it's there for the period of time. But now we're doing it intramuscular. Now we're actually doing it subcutaneous. And those routes of administration came from us talking amongst ourselves. And a friend of ours, a dermatologist in Paris, says, oh, you know, we use this all the time. We do subcutaneous. And, let's do it. Yeah. So it's there. It's happening. And the more people we get on board and the more success we have, it makes the disease more attractive because we are being more successful, because we are making patients feel human. That's always the goal.
Yeah, definitely. You had mentioned the surgical procedure, which I happen to know because we've done an interview with together about it before. But for the CO2 marsupialization, right? Yes. So I know at the last point we talked, there wasn't like a CPT code or anything for that. Is there any further movement on potentially getting one so that it can be more helpful to HS patients, or no luck on that?
Not yet, but I think helpful, more, I guess more available would be the logical term for that.
Okay.
Because it is tremendously helpful for patients. Because, you know, we're now looking in the basic sciences realm. And my daughter is a first-year derm resident at University of Miami. She just started in August. And I'm really excited because that makes three generations. My dad retired in 2020 as a dermatologist. There's me and now my daughter.
Go Sydney. Yeah.
Congratulations.
And she's carrying the HS torch because she's been at the SHSA. We've written papers on this stuff. And now we're doing basic sciences. When I am removing skin from the procedures I'm doing, half of it with tunnels are going to the lab and they're looking at what inflammatory things the cells are making. They're called cytokines. And we're getting the picture that the thing itself is perpetuating the pain and the ooze and the flare. Because, and I've seen this clinically, let's say you got a really yucky underarm. It's got scars and bumps and it's got some areas that are oozing, and maybe you've got the ulcerative variant that we are now trying to characterize where you don't have any skin and all you got is red irritated crap. When you take that out, poof, the pain is gone. Patients routinely say, I hurt 1/10 the pain of a flare, and I know that this pain is going to go away because it's post-operative pain.
Oh, and
we're looking at that. We're trying to characterize what's being made. And then that might present us another target where a medicine can intervene. Because when you think about all the medicines we use, think about the Niagara River. As it's going along and then it's going over into the falls, and any place that you stop the river, you're stopping the cascade of inflammation. And maybe Remicade happens way up here in Toronto. I don't know the whole anatomy or the whole geography rather. And maybe, you know, Humira, different molecules, same TNF blocker, happens closer to the falls, and maybe Cosentyx hits it right after it goes over the fall. But wherever we're targeting, it's stopping all the stuff that is HS. And the more we characterize it, the more basic science we do, that stepping stone, the incremental process of putting together a big mosaic picture of HS, gives us more ammunition, gives us more places to help.
Yeah. There's so much to come.
Yeah, literally. I'm like, it's over.
Yeah, there is so much coming. I mean, it's such an exciting time for us, because I feel like HS has kind of been in the shadows for so long. And now all of a sudden we're getting so much more attention, and you know, more pharmaceutical companies are interested in trying to help figure out what's going on and to find treatment options for us. And it's awesome. And I am so excited about it. It sounds crazy to be excited about HS, but it's a good time for HS to be finally in the spotlight. So I am so hoping that that continues, like you said, until we have multiple treatment options that work for the majority of the population with HS, and that we get all of these people with HS actually counted, so that we can have some, you know, relevant data and real prevalence of how often this is happening and to who. So it's a very, very exciting time. Yes. I'm looking forward to
Thank you so much. It was so informational, and I'm so thankful for you.
Yes. So you can definitely find Dr. Resnick. You can Google him, and it's the Resnick Skin Institute. And he's in Miami, and apparently we're going to be recording next in Miami so that these girls can be your patients.
I know, finally.
So any parting words for us?
Keep the faith. We're working hard.
Yeah. And that is really important to note, you guys, too, is that Dr. Resnick is one of so many people that are working incredibly hard behind the scenes for HS. He is part of the HS Foundation. There is an entire group of doctors who are working on educating other doctors, like we had talked about, and multiple specialties. There's an entire champion group behind us that are working so hard on our behalf. And kudos to you guys, because I don't think you get enough thanks. We're like the endless patient population, right? We just keep coming back over and over and over. Yeah, we're a labor of love, we like to say, your HS patients. So
listen, the goal is to keep you out of my office.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Your goal is to not see us again. But So thank you so much for joining us. I really, really appreciate your time. And thank you again.
It is my pleasure, ladies.
Perfect. And thank you guys for watching this episode of Hidradenitis Superadivas. Go ahead and like and subscribe so that you can be notified of our next episode. And we will see you next time. Bye.
We're the Hidradenitis Superadivas. If you've got HS, you'll want to meet us. It's not your fault. Put the shame to a halt. HS divas know how to have a ball. The Hidradenitis Superadivas. Put the shame to a halt, because it's not your fault.